I know this isn't a big deal to you guys, but I am wearing a hoodie today for the first, not the first time, like the third day in a row, which is
me too.
Pretty awesome.
Me too. I just took mine off for this shoot.
The shoot.
I had a hoodie on this morning for my walk. It was 47 degrees.
That's
I like
much
it
cooler
and I
than
don't.
It is here. Yeah. Oh, you don't?
Well, I don't want summer to be over yet. There's still summery things that I want to do, like look out the window.
That's true. I am kind of mourning. I mean, I love winter. I love fall. I love jeans and hoodies and, you know, but I am kind of already mourning the fact that we have to close our pool for the first time because we've enjoyed it so much for the summer that it's like, oh, now we're going to have to put it away for a while. That's kind of a drag. But at the same time, my kids have soccer games every single night of the week now between boys teams and girls teams and this team and that team. And so sitting in the stands when it's like blazing hot is pretty terrible. Sitting in the stands with a, you know, a hoodie and a blanket, it's pretty cozy. So
it's just like a constant hug. Somebody's always hugging you.
Yeah. It's like that.
It's like a Thunder shirt.
It is. Do Thunder shirts work for your dogs?
Work for me.
Oh.
I haven't. We thought about getting Bear 1 year ago, but up here, I don't have neighbors close enough to be annoyed.
Yeah. Well, our dog named Bear hates thunder, fireworks, anything. I mean, you close a car door, you know, that's like low and bassy, and he just freaks out. He starts shaking. Mm-hmm. We've tried the thunder shirt thing. We've tried this wrap thing where it's tight but not heavy. We've tried all this stuff. Nothing works for him.
Anyway. Yeah, no, we having a big dog like that around here, there's lots of fireworks and guns going off.
Yeah.
So I thought we were worried about, when you said the shirt on him, I thought it was him making noise to somebody else. But on those particular days, I just make sure we keep him inside.
Yeah.
In deep in the house so he's not hearing because a couple of the neighbors are doing fireworks.
Yeah, ours will find a way to the deepest part of the house. Like he'll go into rooms and then into closets and get under, you know, it's interesting how they figure that out. Anyway, what are you guys been up to?
Well, I'm making before, like I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the last episode that will be aired before we are in Boston, correct?
I think we have one more.
That won't be out. That will be out like the,
come out, yeah, the day before. Yeah.
It'll be out while we're there.
So this is the last time we get to remind people to go to a free thing.
That's a good point.
Yes.
There is a free thing you should go to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So September 6th in Wakefield, Massachusetts, outside Boston, we're doing Carolina. I say we're going to be there. Carolina Shoes is putting together a really cool event, free event for the afternoon. It's 11 to 5, I think is what the timing is. Mm-hmm. Free tickets. And it's a live recording and hangout time of our 500th episode, as well as what else is going on. I know that the Making Fun team is going to
be there. We're going to do a big open Q&A there. We're going to tell our stories and there's going to be open questions. We're also going to do open questions. We're going to do speed topics and open questions. And Copper Pig, his podcast, which I want to get the exact name of. I'll say it in just a minute when I find it on my podcast lineup. Copper Pig and his crew are going to do a live podcast. And what else is there? And we're just going to hang out. We're going to have
people are going to bring stuff that they've made.
Bring
and
stuff
there's
to
be
show
some,
off.
Like, pedestals or tables or something set up to show off your work. And maybe some sort of contest around that. I'm not exactly sure. I don't remember the details.
Lots of giveaways.
But, yeah. Lots of stuff. Carolina is really, they're doing all of this. They're putting it together. They're paying for everything. They're just making it into an awesome afternoon for us and for everybody else that's going to be there. So we would encourage you to come hang out. The tickets are free. You just have to go to the Eventbrite and just sign up so they know how many people, because they're getting food and stuff, you know. So they need a headcount. And I'll put the link to that in the show notes. It's been in the show notes for the last couple of weeks. So even if you want to go back and listen to another episode, you can always find that link. It's also all over Instagram. But yeah, go sign up and come hang out with us. It's going to be a good time. So it's a week from this Saturday, which doesn't mean anything to you listening probably, but to me, It's a week from this Saturday.
I'm driving.
I'm flying.
I'm flying as well.
You know what I'm getting in the mail tomorrow, I think? 400 pencils that I'm going to laser etch.
Ooh.
Bob just made a stinky face.
That sounds like work. A lot of work.
Well, I think it'll go quick because I've been spending my time on the lathe, so I could take lots of breaks, go back and forth.
Right. So how do you, I assume you're doing some sort of jig where you can put down.
I'll drop in like 20 at a time.
One at a time?
20 at a time.
Oh.
Like 20, 25 at a time. If I do 25 at a time, that'll go quick.
Yeah. No, that makes sense, I guess. Still sounds like work.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, again, that link for that will be in the show notes, so go check it out.
I just want to say something. I'm going through my podcast library, and I always wondered why I have I follow about 30 podcasts, right? And I'm going through this, and a lot of them are creative podcasts, you know, from our community. And I'm looking at the dates of their last post. And let me just read out some of them. Let's see.
Are you saying we do too much?
No, we 2024, 2024, 2024, 2024, 2023, 2020, 2017, 2022. Wow. These are all people that posted their last thing. So the fact that we're still going is a testament to the fact that neither one of us wants to say quit.
Right, right.
We're all waiting.
Secretly, we're all
waiting for somebody else to say,
we
quit.
We don't want to disappoint the other people. Yeah.
We're like the three versions of the polite chipmunks. That's why we're still here.
Truthfully, and this is
2021 tested podcast. Yeah. 2021.
I will honestly say, and I think this is the truth.
Woodshop 101 2020. Sorry, guys.
Is very hard to monetize in a way that is long term.
Right.
I love podcasting and I wanted to do more of it as part of my career going forward. It is very difficult to get paid to do this. And I think, and this is not me blowing sunshine, this is the truth. Like, our Patreon supporters make this possible. Otherwise, yep, we would not have a way to make it worthwhile for us to continue to do that. I mean, it's three people to continue to do something every week for 10 years. Like, that help, that support.
I hate to blow our own horn or toot our own horn, but we are three responsible people that stick to our commitments.
Well, that is true. Also,
it's hard to find three people.
And we're good looking. Let's just put that in there since we're just.
But I
which
do
is
know.
Why you should be watching the video feed.
That's right.
We all know that our friends start podcasts and there's always one of them. You're like, it's going to be because of him. It's not going to last because of that guy. You know, and that guy can't, he can't do it. No. I'm like, oh, that's great. You guys are you started a podcast with him? Okay. Oh. Well, good luck. That's not going to work.
And
okay.
I think maybe we've, good in luck. All the years, we've had one sponsor.
Yeah, X-Carve.
X-Carve sponsored one episode maybe a long, long time ago.
Do you remember we were supposed to do three and we did one or two and he's like, that's enough for some reason. I forget why.
You don't have to do anymore.
I don't recall.
I don't remember that either.
And then we tried the thing with NBC and they're like, you got to say our name at the 10-minute mark, at the 19-minute mark, and then you get to 20. And we were just like, forget it. Yeah. We don't need it.
We're responsible, but we're not good with direction.
Yeah. Independent.
Mm-hmm.
Good way to put that. But I do seriously think that a lot of the reasons that people don't stick with podcasts is because it's kind of tedious if you don't get anything back from it. You know, it's tedious to figure out how to fit it in to part of a bigger career if you don't make money from it or you don't just absolutely love like who you get to interview or talk to or whatever. It's difficult to do long term. And I think having a funding model, whether it's Patreon or ads or something, is what gives people kind of like long-term, you know, initiative to keep doing it. So I do think that that's probably why we've been able to do it for so long. It's because of Patreon, which is awesome. What have you guys been doing this week?
I started talking. I'm making 11 porch poles in the backyard, so that's fun. In January, three trees fell down in my yard, and I was able to form those three trees. They're all fat enough. I was able to get 6x6 pieces out of them, 9 foot long, 6x6s. And I cut them up in April. I'm going back through my footage now because I'm starting to work on the video. I keep threatening to do this. In fact, somebody sent me a message because I talked about it. He said, hey, I'm on episode 12 of the podcast, and you talk about getting a big enough lathe to make your own porch poles. That was nine years ago. Yeah. So thank you for that. And here we are. I said, I always get it done. It reminds me of a funny story I'll tell you. I'll tell you a funny joke in the after show. It's too involved. Okay. Remind me. I'll tell the funny joke about the magician that takes a bat to the head. I'll tell you, I'm laughing about it.
Okay. Now I have to wait an hour or so.
It's funny. It's worth the wait. Okay. So porch pole. So I season the wood, I guess, or whatever. It was really much the matter of me finally getting to it, because the wood will crack and split, and I'm not going to be too concerned about it because it's my back porch. My front porch has all kind of the more regal, beautifully finished poles that were made in Canada and painted. The ones in the back are going to be raw wood, but I will paint them with spar varnish from Total Boat. So you'll see the natural wooden stuff. I figured I'll start there, and if it gets ugly, I'll just paint it white. But there will be checks and cracks and knots and chips in it, so they're going to be a little bit more rustic than the front ones, which is sort of appropriate because the back porch is not painted, and it's a little bit more of a rustic setting. But this will upsell it a little bit, having these fancy columns. I'm matching the ones that I bought. So I've made a laser cut pattern to go by, and that's my roadmap as I work on the lathe by hand. So I made one. I'll talk about it in a topic. And the second one I started last night. And I bought this lathe from Facebook Market about 6 years ago. It's 12 feet long, and I'm able to get, with a little bit of fudging, like I was able to unbolt the motor and move the motor over about 4 inches, and it's still stable. It's on when you get proper old lathe, it's just a big rail, and then whatever's bolted at one end and the other end, you could literally unbolt them and flip them around. So that bed rail is the basis for a convertible tool. So you could push the motor and the tailstock close together in the middle, however you want. So I was able to unbolt the motor a little bit, slide it over, and tighten it again. And so I got 107 inches. I only need 103 between centers. So it worked out perfect. I really didn't think I was going to be able to, but I'm able to just put one full piece on there. And each piece weighs about 80 pounds. So it is a little nerve-wracking to get it up on there and hit the on switch.
Yeah.
I posted my story, and that was really the first time in my story, because I wanted to see if it was going to fly off. I wanted to capture it. So I didn't turn it off. I let it run, and I didn't get in front of it. And then I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I'm about to stand in front of this thing. I'm like, if this thing flies off, it's going to like roll right up my chest and up and over my head. And I keep checking and checking. And then I developed the confidence to stand there and do it. So it took me a few minutes to run it and to stand by and watch it run and see if the machine was going to start walking. You try your best to center these things, but
so I wonder how many people right now have the Ren and Stimpy log song going through their heads. Do you guys know the song at all?
Big, it's heavy, it's wood.
Yes. Yeah.
So I made it through one, and I started my second one. And it's a big accomplishment. It's one of those things that has been on my list since I bought the house. I always thought to myself, I'm going to make my own porch poles. And until that one day on Facebook Market, I saw this 12-foot lathe, which was in reasonable distance. It was only 25 miles away. I was like, ooh. And that was a lathe that I bought, and it came in pieces, and I got it home. The guy said he bought it from an auction because I never turned it on. I didn't know how, because the wires were cut. And the head of the lathe, which is weighs like 400 pounds, it's this giant old school motor made in the 20s. It had about 15 wires going from the motor head to the switch on the frame. And the auction people just snipped them to be able to pick up one and the other. And so I had to go in there with a microscope at the time, with a little magnifying glass, and look at the end of each wire, because it was like maybe 17 wires, all black. But I had to match up the angle of the snip from the lineman pliers. And that's how I was able to match which wire went where.
By
checking the angle of the snip, every wire had a little line on the side of it from its wrap. It was like the way it was manufactured in the 20s. It's really old wire. but to look at the relationship of the snip in relationship to the line on the side of the wire, I was able to match every wire to each other.
Dang.
Yeah.
I would have gave up a long time ago.
Yeah.
And that was specifically the result of watching Forensic Files.
That's funny.
every wire snip, guys, they use, that's how they catch bomb makers. They check the snip of the wire forensically to the shape of their pliers. So if they could find a couple of striations in the cut that match the pliers found on the desk, they know that they have a match or at least a connection.
And now Jimmy knows the middle name of the guy who made the shears in the factory that cut the wire.
The guy who actually who snipped the motor off the auction head is doing time right now. Got arrested.
You made sure of it?
Yes. I was like that parrot. Did you ever see the parrot that curses? Pebble, the cursing parrot. You gotta go look it up. And the cat's like, you guys never saw Pebbles?
I don't need to look it up. I just heard it.
Yeah.
It's the best. Fun. This guy, he inherited a parrot that was with an owner that cursed all the time. And the guy's got this like white cockatoo.
Wasn't that in a movie?
No, it's real. The guy's got a white cockatoo that, like, when he gets it mad, it just goes. There's a couple of tangible curses in there, but I'm not going to do it.
Cool.
I'm going to send you a video.
Okay, great.
Or Pebbles, the angry.
Awesome. David, what about you?
I'm still working on the Ham's beer sign. I'm actually going to finish it up today, and it'll probably be out this weekend. So I found this old, since I was a kid, I just loved Ham's beer signs. It's, a lot of them are backlit, and they have this motion to them. The one I'm making doesn't have the motion, and I'll explain why in the video. But this is like a step one, and then the next one will be a motion one. But it's coming out really awesome. It's this plastic sign, and it's got a photo in there, and I'm making it bigger and out of wood. And the photo that I'm using, I actually took on film, and I developed the film and putting it in there, and it got LED lights to backlight it and everything. But it's kind of like in the shape of a house, and it's hard to explain, but it's the shape of like a ranch style 50s home, and where like windows and siding would be, it's photos and advertisements for Ham's beer. And I'm replacing it with my own phrase and photo in there. One of the things that I have discovered throughout this process is making me super excited is the chimney. Oh, Jimmy found it. Jimmy's going to play it.
No, I won't.
the chimney on the original has this red brick paper over top of it. And I wanted to do a real brick texture. I think we talked about this last week on the podcast. And Fusion just last month released a new feature where you can bring in photos and it'll take the black and white tones of a photo and make that into a texture. So I went out and I took photos of, we have like on my shop, there's the bottom 3 feet is like this brick texture, and I took photos of the brick and I kind of rearranged it so it's vertical and looks like a chimney, and converted it to black and white. And you bring that into Fusion and it takes any of the black parts and it embosses it, and takes any of the white parts and debosses it, I think is the right word. And I kind of emphasized where the mortar would be, so I had to paint all the mortar black, and I bring this in and it works like magic. And so the chimney is made out of wood, but then I'm 3D printing like a veneer that goes over top of that. And
looks amazing.
It's hard to tell on camera, but it has a very, very cool texture. Cool. And I hand painted all the
bricks. I was going to say, did you paint those shades?
Yeah. Huh. But like I see myself using this texture technique to like CNC textures on wood. And it works cool. So it's not just black and white. So anything gray goes in between there. So you could have like sweeping curves on a texture. And I'm sure there's been other ways to do this in other programs, but the fact that Fusion just is a program I already used and they just introduced this feature is really cool.
I mean, that's a pretty significant feature as far like as a convenience. To be able to add a texture to something in Fusion is kind of a pain in the butt. You know, I mean, it's not really built around that as an endpoint. And so that's a huge convenience for them to add to, you know, you get a lot out of it for something pretty simple. That's I can't wait to try that.
Yeah. And my CNC software is the VCarve, and they have like built-in textures that you can put in there, but these are textures that a million other people have used. But now I can go in, and I was playing around with this yesterday where I was making like a circle pattern in Illustrator. And if I just used that pattern, it would have a very definite like embossed, debossed hard lines. But if I take that into Photoshop and I blur it, those lines get smoothed out. And so then it has this wavy texture. So it's a pretty cool feature.
Awesome. Yeah, I want to play with that. I've been working with the new Bamboo Lab H2S printer, and it's got like the four color, like the AMS on top of it, so you can have four different filaments in it. And it's also got a laser in it, 10-watt laser. So it's like a single machine that can do, well, you can add the laser to it. You can also add a draw knife, you know, for cutting vinyl, and then you can also add a marker. There's like a marker holder, so you can have it draw things as well. And I haven't gotten to mess with those two things yet, but even with the multi-printing on the, it's a bigger bed, and so having the multicolor printing and stuff, I'd like to try something with that texturing and see what that would come out with. Because I think you can also, and you can do this in most slicers, but I know in the Bamboo Lab Studio, I guess it's called, like their slicer software, you can paint different color filaments on it. So if you have the model in there, then you can say at a certain height, switch to this filament. And you can do that as many times as you want, or you can physically like with the cursor go and click on areas with different shapes to actually paint different colors. So if you had a model like that had a brick texture or something, and the, you know, the mortar was all at a certain height, you could go in and just say like at the mortar height, make it all gray or whatever. And it would come.
Because I have a Bamboo printer, the H2D, and it had, I can do the multicolor. I didn't even think about using that. And I definitely would have done the mortar white and then like the brick gray. And I probably still would have painted some things just to give each brick like a different
tonal
look.
Natural
but
tonal.
I didn't, for some reason, I didn't think to use that feature.
Yeah. Now you know.
Now I know.
Now it's an option. Cool. Well, I've been working with that printer as far as what I've been doing. Working on a project that's coming up in a couple of weeks for the desk, using the different parts of that printer, and I'm still trying to figure out all the details, so there's not a whole lot to really talk about there. But I also made some progress on the kind of shed, the pool shed thing that I've been working on.
Yes.
So I got that design pretty much done and have started Infusion. I mean, I modeled down to the stud Infusion. So I can go in and count. I need this many 2x4s of this length, and I need, you know, everything and the sheathing and the roofing and the siding. It's all there, which is, so I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were like, that's not really the right program to use for that kind of stuff, you know. And I guess it's not. But at the same time, it worked really well to be able to, like, I put down the bottom plate for a wall, and then I make a stud, and then I just hit the repeat thing and drag that stud all the way across the wall. And then, so I built the frame in full walls, then went back and placed the windows and doors where I wanted them. Knocked them out and then reframed around those gaps, you know, where the gaps were. So it's actually worked out really well. The patterning.
There's probably construction programs that have all that script written. So it's like put a window here and then it puts in the king stud, the jack stud, and all that stuff. But
probably
it's just as well.
But, you know, the patterning stuff, being able to pattern the studs across and then for sheathing and siding, you know, you put one 4x8 sheet and then you just pattern it across the entire surface of the thing. I had minutes to do that.
Yeah.
But I've ended up with a complete list of materials for an entire, you know, top
down
to bottom.
Down to the minute, like, you know exactly what you need.
Yeah, which is pretty wild, you know. Yeah. And so now I've finalized that design, which feels really good. And so now I'm going through and building out a materials list so I can start putting together cost and ordering all this stuff. And it's so much material that I don't think I've ever had material delivered to the house from like one of the big stores, but this is going to be it. Because it's just like, it's a stupid number of 2x4s and a stupid number of 2x10.
Isn't it amazing how much material it takes to build a little house?
Yeah.
And you think about a big house and it's insane. Yeah. The amount of 2x and sheets and rocks, for instance, I'm ripping up my basement and the amount of rocks that somebody 300, 200 years ago piled up to make the basement. It's incredible.
Yeah. So I'm starting to put that together and I'm realizing how expensive it's going to be, which is a drag, but you know,
crowd print it, cut it into a million 1x1 square pieces and have everybody print and then glue it together. That's what they did with that figurine 3D DIY Dave did at me.
I have no interest in having a building that is
3D printed.
3D printed for one, but also 3D printed by a whole bunch of other people.
The million colors.
Yeah, a million colors.
No, you should do that though as a project. That was really fun. I mean, it's, you know, that's in your wheelhouse to be able to pick an object and group print it and then assemble it. It would be a lot of fun.
It's like other people are doing all the work.
It's okay. Everybody wants to be part of it. Like everybody sent me the license plates. There's been in my mind.
I mean, that's cool.
Yeah, it's been in my mind because I've been looking at the figurine that Dave did of me. It's at my other shop. And I was like, I really like to do something like that again, but I'm not that good with the programs. I can get help.
Yeah, you could get that done.
I'm going to make you a house and 3D print it really small. Everyone's going to print 1-inch cube.
Ugh, that sounds terrible. Can you imagine how many little tiny boxes with 1-inch cubes would show up? So anyway, I'm trying to move ahead on that. I'm trying to like get all the ducks in a row to start that in the next couple of months. I was going to say when it starts cooling off, but it's already cooling off. So this is actually like the perfect time to be outside, you know, building walls and...
Will you build a proper foundation or is it going to go on the edge of the pool deck? Because I know you did some nice work around the pool.
Yeah, we had them pour, when they poured the slab around the pool, the deck, we had them pour a big slab for this specific.
Oh, so it's ready, it's prepped.
Yeah, it's ready to go. And that's another thing about, like, I designed it knowing that it was going to go on a slab. And as somebody who doesn't know much about construction or, you know, how you go about planning a building, I just assumed, yeah, we'll put a slab down and then I'll just build on top of it. And then I got to looking into it. I'm like, oh, well, there's a bunch of other ways that I could have done this that are fine. One of the ways when they were framing it up, I could have had them put in like a little 1-inch or 3-inch, like a concrete footer, not a footer. I guess it's a footer for the walls. It's just like a 2x4 shaped concrete piece that's built into the pad. Mm-hmm. And it creates a little lift for all of the wood to sit on so it doesn't have any real water contact. And that's, you know, something I could have done, but it would have cost more. And from looking into it, the way that I'm going to do it directly on the pad is going to be fine. I intentionally had them level the pad in a way that drains toward the drain that's built into the deck. Mm-hmm. And then the back of the building is going to be on the edge of the pad, so it's going to hang over. So the only water that will collect on... next to the building will be draining downhill towards a drain.
You could also put those steel feet. Have you seen those steel feet? If you're going to have like 4x4s or 6x6s as your where it touches the concrete, or unless you're just going to build a square frame that touches the concrete everywhere. Yeah. Because if you did like the four components of the corners, you could have these little steel brackets that are designed. I did them in my porch. So the 6x6 sits in a steel plate that has a 1-inch air gap, and then that steel plate goes underneath it again. So it holds the bottom of the thing, and then there's an air gap, and then the steel is down on the concrete. So that never really the steel, everything is sitting on that steel cup that has an air gap underneath it. I'll find one to send it to you. But that's what I did on my porch at the top of each one of the porch columns.
So I'm going to do... just, you know, pressure treated for the bottom plates for everything. And then there's like a sill tape, I think is what it's called. And it's kind of it's a foam tape that you put underneath that plate above the concrete. So it stops moisture direct transfer, leaching, you know. And then on the outside of that, you can seal up the outside edge between the wood and the concrete so that any water that builds up on there as it's running downhill, it doesn't run into underneath that tape. It runs away from it. So I think it'll be fine. It's one of those things, though, that I've researched. I looked at a few different ways to do it, and it looks like that's a perfectly fine way to do it. And I know as soon as I do it on video, there's going to be a flood of, like, your whole building's going to rot. It's going to fall down. It's going to be that kind of a thing, just from one little, you know, because everybody has a different experience with different ways to do that. And whether they can prove that something is bad or not, if it's different from what they did, it's probably the wrong way to do it. I understand that. But so I'm trying to get ahead of that and research the best way to do these different things. But I still know that no matter what I research and no matter what I choose.
Well, you know how I do that at the graveyard house? I just don't film it. I just say, look at what I did. It's done. So there are several things that I'm doing in the graveyard house that I'm just leaving out of the edit completely because I'm taking a controversial approach to it.
Yeah.
If it's not 100% conventional that everybody would expect and respect, I don't show it.
Well, and that's another thing that I have yet to
show. I should show it. It'll probably get my views up because then everybody would be calling me an idiot.
Yeah. I haven't figured out how, because this is going to be a bigger total project than anything I've really ever done, I don't know how to, I don't want to say minimize, but like how to go about showing the process in the way that I usually do. I try to make it obvious that, you know, what's happening so that there's nothing hidden. There's nothing that's a mystery for people. That's like the point to me. But I can't show everything. It would just be tedious and would take too long. So I don't really know.
A lot of time lapses with something like this.
Yeah,
seriously.
I guess so.
You set up a time lapse, like a 2 second, if you're going to build a wall, do like a, I always do 1 second time lapse, 1 second per frame so that you have a little bit of room to work with. If you do like 2 or 3 seconds a frame, the resolution's really low.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You could always speed up the sped up. So you get a 1 second per thing. So you can always speed that up.
And then the TV show way of doing it is
cut away and come back when it's done.
there's a gap in time, and you might film a little bit of those things, and you're like, okay, we already went ahead and did A, B, and C, and D, and you just show real quick clips of those things. Now we're going to do this thing because this is more interesting to show and more exciting for a video.
Yeah. And I think, you know, at least from the framing, I'm trying to break the whole project in my mind into kind of stages that would be capturable for a single video. So where it's not too much, but it's also not going to drag the thing out to, you know, it's like 20 videos to build this shed or whatever. And so I think stuff like the framing, you know, you kind of go not in depth, but you make it clear what you're doing for one wall, and then the other walls are kind of the same. So it'll probably be that kind of a deal where I walk through one of four, and then it's like, okay, now we're going to stand up the other walls that I did the same way, you know, and then you show, look, this wall has windows and doors on it and stuff, because
this could be a good experiment to see how an hour and 15 minute video performs in your channel too.
Ooh, yeah, that's true. That's risky. I don't know.
Sometimes long videos do really well, though, you know, because they have that watch time, and people might not watch the whole thing in one sitting, and they might come back to it.
Skip Garage, every video is an hour and plus, and he gets millions of views.
Yeah, but he's so, I'm not that entertaining. Not like him. I mean, he's a lot of fun, you know?
He is.
So I'm not exactly sure how to go about filming this thing yet. Honestly, my brain is probably still kind of putting that off just because there's a bunch of other stuff to figure out.
Oh, I get it. Yeah.
But that's where I'm spending a lot of my time right now, is trying to prepare for those in a couple of months videos, you know, how I can make that happen and be kind of efficient to get it done and stuff. So that's what I've been up to. Jimmy, you had kind of a thing you were thinking about because of your porch poles.
I was just thinking, what are some tips that we could discuss to maintain a consistency in work and your work ethic? And of course, in the consistency of doing a repetitive job, like making 11 porch poles by hand, no CNC, all using a cardboard pattern, making sure Now, I'm going to make 11 porch poles, and I guarantee it, they're not going to be exactly the same. There's no way. But when you look at one and you look at the other, and they're all going to be about 5 or 7 feet apart, you're not going to really be able to see the discrepancy in between them. As long as I stick to that cardboard template as much as possible. And what I've also made, and I shared it on Instagram or my Patreon, is I have my pattern. The design itself is 41 inches long. Yeah, I sent you guys pictures where the design is only in that rounded part of the column. I got 38 inches up and whatever the top goes wild because that's what I trim. But in between is that round spot. And I take my laser cut pattern and I put all the key points on it. And I have them numbered from 1 to 10, just happen to be an even number. And then I made little wooden calipers that are going to go 1 to 10. And as long as I hit the diameter at each one of those points and then connect them in between, I'm going to be consistent. Now, the first one I made, I sent you pictures of it. The corners all chipped off right where it goes from round to square. I chipped all the corners a little bit. And I was like, how am I going to avoid that? And then in the middle of the night, laying in bed, I was like, just hand saw the corners first so that it's completely detached from the square part of the column. So when you go in with a lathe and you go in like a perfect square, it starts throwing heavy chips. Now I'm going to pre-hand saw right where the design goes from round to square so that when I put it on the lathe, those chips just chip off and past the saw blade, nothing will happen past the saw blade. So that's like one stupid little major improvement that I made from one to the second one. Now, I'm partly into the second one of 11, looking for clues all along the way. So the first one I went in, I started immediately making the curved parts of the design. Now I'm going to try something with the second one, which might establish a pattern going forward. At every key point of those 10 points, I'm just going to go directly in with the square nose chisel and just hit that point. So I'm going to do 10 pieces all the way across at 10 spots. I'm going to hit the diameters. So it's going to look more like a, I don't even know, like an Art Deco or like kind of a brutalist design where it's just going to be ring, skinny, ring, ring, fat. And then I'm going to connect the design, all the sweeping curves in between those. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try that. So I'm trying to break down the process so that the next 8 or 9 won't be as daunting.
And of course you're going to figure out the perfect method on the last one.
Yes. By the time I get to it, I'm going to start a column company. I'm going to make a porch pole company. I'm going to make 2 more and that'll be the end of my company.
Yeah. I was going to say,
no, I don't want to do that. I can't remember the name of the place that I used to get the other ones. I would like to reference them. I can't remember the name, but I'll find them. They used to come up in my Instagram all the time. But now that I'm talking about porch poles, I'm holding my phone in my face. Now that I'm talking about porch poles, my phone's going to feed me like Google ads for porch pole companies.
Yeah, Amazon's going to be like, you want porch poles? We heard you like porch poles. Yeah. I got these porch poles.
Are you 50 and balding? Like, I know the phone can listen. Is it looking at me too? So the idea of always looking for ways of making my job better. And when I used to visit factories all the time in Hong Kong, for years I used to go to China and go to factories and to see the little innovative ways that people have a mundane job on a factory line doing, you know, grabbing. Well, for instance, one factory that first comes to mind is the silk screening factory. I went to a lot of blow up factories, but I remember you made an inflatable once. I went to several factories in northern China that make blow-ups, like inflatables, like pool floaties. And one of the factories I went to, they were making little Pepsi cans for a Pepsi promotion having to do with, there was like Pizza Hut and Taco Bell, and these little blow-up Pepsi cans. But I watched this room that had hundreds of feet of table space where they silk screened the pattern. So they take this piece of vinyl and they have to silk screen like 15 colors to make 15 processes. And it's just a bunch of people following each other with a silk screen that lands right on the edge of the table. So somebody sets up the whole entire lineage with a piece of vinyl. And then the first person goes down with the silk screen and lays down the color. And then there's a person right behind them with the next color. And then a person, so the whole room is just people going zip, 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 zip with ink on the, enough ink on the roller to just go. And they make hundreds by the end of the process. They've silkscreened probably 300 things that are probably the size of like a piece of A4 paper. And just watching all the different improvements that you could tell are at the end of a very long, tedious process of learning. And although it's hard to describe because it's really more of a visual thing, but the little things to make the job consistent, faster and easier and more efficient. You see a lot of these things, like you see a woman at a sewing machine and there's like something taped so that the thread does a certain thing. Like looking for these clues is important as a designer and a maker, looking for the things to make your life easier and more efficient.
Well, and that's one of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about them before, is that making it better can be making it better or making it faster or easier, but not necessarily all of those things. Maybe it is.
Yeah,
but like in the process of your repetition, you're probably not trying to make it better because you already had the first one looking pretty much like you wanted it to look. You're trying to find a more efficient way to do it.
Yeah. I also, I'm trying to think of a way too, and I thought of it this morning. I'm laying in bed. I'm like, I need a buffer I always use a buffer to get it quick sharpened back. It's kind of like a strop, but I'll just use a buffer with a buffing wheel with rouge on it. And I thought to myself, oh, I have that buffer over there in that other shop. Let me just unbolt it from the table and bring it so it's right near the lathe. Because I keep finding myself shutting down and going and sharpening my tools. But if it was right next to me, I could just flip it on and buff it while I'm working. Then it gets dull enough where I got to go to the machine and put a new edge on it. But you get a lot of mileage out of just buffing your tool as you're working before you have to put a new micro bevel on it. So things like that. And obviously you don't want to compromise the design. I did years ago, I came up with this concept where I made a lathe pattern. And I was thinking of this project at the time where I made a lathe pattern and I got an angle grinder with a blade on it. And the angle grinder would follow this pattern. It would kind of rock and roll on it as it was pushed along and it would cut it into the lathe. But I found that was just, you can't control if you have an accident, like if you have a big chip out, you can't control it. And somebody actually did end up making a really efficient version of my same idea. And he never saw my idea. So it was just parallel thinking. But when I saw his version, I was like, but when I came to this thing, I thought, do I make that pattern making thing? It's like, I don't think so. There's something, I'm not sitting here trying to say I'm a hero that I did everything by hand, but there's just more control. There's knots in my wood and you got to like approach that section with the knots with more care so you don't get a big blowout. And my lathe is a pattern maker's lathe. So it's like half between a wood lathe and half between a metal machine lathe. So you guys, I just sent you the picture of where the middle is just rounded. I was able to do that on the machining cross slide. So I didn't even use the chisel. I used the chisel that's like connected to the machine, just like a machining lathe. So all I had to do is establish my start and stop points and then roll the thing all the way to one side, 41 inches, dig in a little bit more and roll it all the way back, 41 inches, and dig in until now that's why it's like a perfect cylinder. Now that's my starting point for the artistry, So I don't know. It's interesting when you got to do something repetitive and where it's important to stay conscious and look for shortcuts and things to make each job improve. So like I said, the very first one has a little chip outs on the corners before I realized all I had to do was just take my temple saw and just cut the corners so that the chip falls out right up to the saw blade. That was a stupid little improvement. Oh, and then when you ever have if you have a 6x6 spinning on a lathe and you approach it with a chisel, it's one of the most terrifying things.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
So this next one that I did, while it was on the horses, I just took out a big chisel and a mallet and chipped the whole corner off. Just like whacked it. Got the whole sharp corner off of where I was going to take and rotate it. So that helped a little bit because it's also jarring to the machine. The machine's like, what are you doing to me? Like, it's like, hey. Stop. You know, no, I got to get this. Like, it's like, nay, oh, and then it starts getting easier as you bang the corners off. But if I just chip the corners off while nothing's spinning, it makes life a lot easier.
Is that the original motor on that?
It is. It is. And one of my fans hooked me up with the same exact lathe, which I have at my other shop, that's only 6 feet. Because that motor that's on there, I've talked about it a few times. When I forensically connected all the wires back together, also because the motor sat in a warehouse for so long before it actually ever got moved again, there was a tremendous amount of mouse urine inside the winding. So the mice urine deteriorated the copper winding, so it only has two of the four speeds. When you go to put it in any of the, so it's, I got one, two doesn't work, three works, four doesn't work. And so if you try and put it in the speeds of the motor, starts sparking and spitting.
I heard the new Harvey lathe has a mouse urine remover built into the
evacuation. It's like a little push stick that just pushes it out. It's like, you're not welcome here. So when I complained about that, my friend said, hey, there's a guy in my group selling a lathe that's exactly the same one as that, but short. So I have an extra head. I have the same exact lathe. I don't like, it's such a beautiful tool. It's perfectly preserved, the 6 foot one, but the parts are interchangeable. So I couldn't just unbolt that head and put it on this, but I got to deal with the wiring again because of the way it's wired through the frame. Or I could just weld the bed next to it, and then I could have a 6 plus 12 foot bed. How many feet is that? That's 18. I can have an 18. I can make 18 foot porch poles. So, kidding.
Do you have a porch that's 18 feet tall?
No, I'm kidding. I wouldn't do that.
I mean, I
could bolt
it's
them
you.
Together.
So I don't know if that's kidding or just like, yeah, I should probably buy another house so that I can make 18 foot porch pole.
So that's my story. Looking for ways of cutting corners.
Yeah, I recently, just on the project that I'm working on right now, I'm like, I think I might have to change the orientation of my table saw. It's not so much as repeated cuts, but doing, right now my table saw is set so the outfeed table goes towards the bench. And the thought has always been, you know, you table saw a bunch of boards, you cut a bunch of boards, you walk around to the table saw and you can just move all the boards right to the bench. But when I'm working on small projects and I have the assembly over on my bench and I'm cutting to fit a bunch of pieces, and then I have to like take that, walk all the way around the table saw, go to the bench, right? Got to remove a little bit more, go all the way back. And I'm like, I don't know which way is better now. And so
getting
I don't
rid
know
of
if
the
I
steps
need...
really does help.
Yeah, it really does help. It just, even, I mean, it's, you know, it's a 15-foot walk, but when you're doing something that's repetitive and back and forth, you're like, this is stupid. What am I doing here?
Well, there was a lot of that when I was working on the car, because it's a lot of trim to fit. So I trim it, and then I'm like, I need to cut off a blade's width. And then I walk back over to the chop saw. And then like I started thinking to myself, okay, if I'm going to walk 20 feet to the chop saw, what else can I bring with me to do while I'm on that trip? Like going to the store, it's like calling everybody in the house. Anybody need anything?
Right.
So it's like, okay, I'm walking over to the chop saw. It's 1 a.m. I'm a little tired. Let me bring these three pieces of wood that also need to be cut. So I'm like fitting four pieces at the same time, just the efficiency to use up that walk across the room.
I mean, I do that all the time. I just assume that everybody did that, but like I, every single time I get up from my desk, my first thought is what can I put in my hand to drop off on the way to this thing? Mm-hmm. So I'll end up with a bunch of tools like this. And between here and my workbench in the other room, it's like, well, that got put away and this got dropped in the thing and that got thrown away and this got put
I do that when I'm in my shop. I'm like, I'm walking to the corner of the shop to get something. I look around and go, what goes in that toolbox over there? Oh, let me grab this and this so that I'm not needing it anymore. I do that all the time.
But David, like with your situation there, you know, in that case, does it make more sense to move the table saw or does it make more sense to have a temporary assembly situation that is moved towards the table saw?
As these words were coming out of my mouth, I'm like, I should have just had a little table set up behind the table saw to do this and make life easier. Maybe I just need another bench. I need two benches.
Or another table saw. You can just or put another table saw.
Yeah. it's funny when you get in the moment and your shop is a mess because you've got all the tools out and you're doing all of these things and there's not actually a lot of room to put another table, even temporarily, because filming things just makes everything difficult. There's a light on a tripod, and then there's a camera tripod, and you're moving things around, and there's just not enough room. And you're just in the moment, and you don't want to, you're in the zone, you don't want to rearrange things, and you don't want to mess up your flow, even though the walking is messing up your flow.
Yeah. It's which one is causing less
right
of a problem, you know, is the walking or the the moving. And it's funny because I think Jimmy, you were talking about your like patterning thing idea that you were going to make earlier. And you're like, should I make the patterning thing? And
oh, yeah,
no,
yeah.
I'm just going to make 11 and I'm going to muscle through it.
Yeah.
I far more enjoy, I would like to solve the problem by making the pattern tool. Like cutting something 11 times, no, thank you. I don't care what it is. I cannot do that in an interesting way. But solving a problem and making a tool that can make that happen faster, easier, maybe even a little bit, that's interesting to me. And so like even in your case, David, that like setting up a mobile assembly station to make that walk, I would way overkill that instead of just walking 15 feet a few times to just do it. Like, I don't know. I think I like, even though I don't do everything in the most efficient way, I enjoy creating efficiencies. I enjoy making tools that are, you know, like things that make other things easier.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of those things are just not really that interesting to show off to people. I don't actually get to do it as much as I would like. But I guess I have done more of that in the last couple of years, you know, more jigs and holders and camera mounts and things that are really efficiencies for the next thing. I just create projects out of them. But
I like the off-camera setup to be efficient. Like I've done this with my office where I'm like, I tried to make everything as efficient as possible, especially for like music stuff. So all I got to do is just hit an on switch and I can record all these different instruments at the same time. And for me, that's kind of more fun than actually making the music.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm the exact same way. Yep.
Yeah. I like having the potential of making music.
Right. Yeah, having it ready to go. And having everything that you need to make it possible, whether you actually do it or not. Yeah, I'm yep. totally there. I really don't like repetitive. It's not that I don't like repetitive work. I think I struggle with, if I have to film something, doing something repetitive there seems, I don't know. I don't have a good way to take a repetitive task and make it interesting enough for a video. And so something like porch poles, there have been many things that would be useful in my house, would be things that I could actually, it would make a difference, but they're not, it's not a bunch of different types of things that make something interesting. In that case, it's one thing over and over. And I cannot justify for myself making a video about one thing over and over and over. So it's really interesting and kind of cool that you can, Jimmy. And
it'll get 50,000 views, so I don't care.
Well, I think part of the thing that makes it interesting is how ridiculous it is. Like you don't have a 3-foot lathe and you're making 11 baseball bats.
Yeah.
Or 11 spindles for a chair or whatever. It's a ridiculously long lathe that could kill you if anything went wrong. And so that makes it interesting because the longer you do that, the more pieces you do with that, the higher the risk is that something is going to go wrong.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I don't want to try to find ways to add danger or something to my repetitive tasks to make them interesting to watch. But anyway, I do have trouble with that. I have trouble with justifying repetitive tasks, not in doing them, but in justifying them as content because I just...
Well, like I've said to you before, I said this to you and you acknowledged that it was an interesting approach, is that I'll make 3 or 4 of them before I even turn the camera on because I just want to get into it. But since this does have that element of danger, I did film the very first couple of situations because
could be the last thing you ever film. Why wouldn't you film?
Exactly. Like I said, if that piece of wood came loose, it would just literally roll right up across my face and over the back and down the back of my body. I did the math. I was looking at it.
I don't think that's how it would work.
It would probably stop in front of my teeth and rip all my bottom teeth out, then roll its way up my nose, pull my eyebrows would probably get tangled in it. So it would slow
and
it down.
You would both be embedded in the wall behind you. That's how that would work.
Here's a hot tip for you. If you're worried about your safety and you're working alone, just start a YouTube live stream so people can watch. And then if something does happen,
you end up on the Philip DeFranco show. Finally. YouTuber kills himself with his lathe on a live stream. If it happens on a live stream, it'll make the Philip DeFranco show.
Totally worth it. Cool. Any other thoughts on repetitive work?
Or well, I don't get to do a lot of
400
pencils.
So if anybody wants to, I'll do a little bit of, I'll do some Instagramming on my 400 pencil etch.
Now, I would say that we could split those 400 between the three of us, but I don't want to do that. So I'm not going
to. I ain't got time.
I ain't got time for that.
I'm leaving 1 week from tomorrow.
That's right. Only a week. Yep. Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters who make this show possible for 10 years. Make it reasonable for us to get together. Not reasonable. Make it possible for us to get together and talk about stuff and actually keep the show going for so long. We are really, truly grateful for all the support over the years from everybody, especially our top supporters, Making with Mog, Pete Rondeau, A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Matthias Garnow, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, The New Janky Workshop, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Design, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, Corey Ward, and Nick Ryan. But also people like Gib Clark.
Ah, Gib.
There are a lot of people that help us out in many different ways, all different levels. We are really grateful for every bit of it. And they all get the after show. Doesn't matter if it's a dollar or more, everybody gets the after show. And that is a separate podcast feed that you only get through Patreon. So you have to go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level, and then in the top right, there's a podcast feed that you can add, RSS feed that you can add to your player. And there's also links for the video after show if you want to watch it on YouTube. The main show is on YouTube for anybody that wants to watch it. And yeah, go check it out if you're interested. We're very grateful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything to recommend this week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Drew didn't come through for you this week?
Yeah. Did he only send you something this time? Thanks for nothing, Drew. No, I don't have anything really to recommend.
I'm going to talk about Paul Jackman posted a video 1 hour ago. I haven't watched it yet, but I know what the subject matter is because I'm probably in there somewhere. Two summers ago, Total Boat hosted a boat race. We had an insane fun time. Everybody built an amateur boat. Nobody knew what they were doing as far as boat mechanics go. My boat would have won if I put a fin on the bottom, because when my boat was so short, when you row, you just row in circles. But if I had a fin on the bike, Mike from Total Boat's like, if you put a fin on the bottom, you probably would stay straight. I'm like, that's a good idea. So I needed a tail fin, but I ended up giving my boat design to a friend of his who was going to actually electrify it and put a motor in it. But Paul talks about his experience. We were all teamed up, and his team was with Zyla and a couple people, and I was with Derek and Bobby Duke, and we had a lot of fun. It was a great week, and I have 4 hours of footage, 5 hours of footage I need to cut into a 10-minute video. And Paul, it only took Paul 2 years. It's only going to take me 2.5 years to put my video together. So shout out to Total Boat, and go check out How Not to Build a Boat by Paul Jackman. And I'm sure we're all in there because we were all there. It was a whole big event.
All right. Mine is a video called I Invented an Adjustable Ratcheting Wrench. And I don't know if you've ever seen like the all-in-one tools that has like all the little, looks like little bamboo skewers that wraps around the bolt.
It's like the hand thing where you stick your hand in.
Yeah.
And it'll come through, but they don't work. Bolt head.
Yeah. I bought one years ago. They don't work very well. Yeah. This guy invented a wrench that has how many sides does the bolt head have? Six, whatever, a sixtagon. And it all expands and,
I'll accept that.
And contracts. And he goes through the process of how he invented it. And it's just a fascinating video and a smart dude.
What's interesting is there's sort of the invention race in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And even it's still going on to make the ultimate wrench, the ultimate adjustable one-and-done wrench. And there's been lots of inventions that are pretty interesting. I have a wrench collection. I never really shut it off, but I have a pretty cool wrench collection.
I have a building down the street that's just my wrench collection.
Yeah. It's my wrench collection, right next to my Chevys. Yeah.
I talk about your wrench collection. Like I know a guy. I know a guy. He's got an amazing wrench collection.
It's all these like old school patents. It's crazy. But this, I got to watch this. I'm interested.
So I do have a little recommendation. It's somebody you guys have probably met before. Have you ever met Daryl at Dreadnought Woodshop?
Yes. Several
awesome
times.
Awesome guy. Yeah. Oh, I don't even remember where I met him. Some event. Just super cool. Does a lot of wood turning. He hasn't put a video out in 2 years, it looks like.
Oh, I hope he's all right.
Yeah. But the reason I'm bringing him up is because I went the other day. So you remember my whole dowel fiasco?
Yeah.
Where I put the pegboard wall and the dowels were the wrong size. They were all too big by like 0.012 or something. So I've tried several things since then. Wesley Treat sent me an idea of like adding a little split to the end, like a cross split so that it can squeeze into the hole. I did that on 98 of these dowels. It still was too difficult to get them in the hole for the lady that I put this in her shop. And so I started looking at different drill bits that I could use or hand reamers so that I could ream the holes out on these things. Anyway, I've tried a bunch of stuff. It never worked. So the other day I'm over there, I'm trying to get this thing to work. And I'm like, there's got to be a simple way to make a dowel slightly smaller, just slightly, not with a lathe. We've already talked about that. There were many reasons why that didn't work. I'm like, there's got to be something. So I search for it. And the first video that comes up, I don't know why I didn't search for the exact same words 2 months ago or whenever it was that there's a problem. Somehow, the first video that came up was Daryl, and it was the perfect solution. So his video was something about like changing the diameter of, I don't even remember what it was called now, of a dowel. And basically, he just puts it on the table saw, barely lifts the blade above it, puts it on a sled, and then rolls the dowel, and it just shaves off, you know, the end of the thing. And I was like, well, why didn't I think of that? Because that's really simple and does exactly what to do. And I needed 3/4. I think one of the reasons I didn't try to use the table saw before was because the example I saw was a single blade. And so when I saw him do this, I'm like, well, yeah, I could just put a dado stack on it and actually take off 3/4 of an inch long, you know, which is all I really need. And so I walked over to the table saw, put on a dado stack, and rolled one, and it was the perfect diameter. So Daryl, in addition to being a really nice guy and a really good turner, solved the problem for me, and I'm very grateful. So go watch some of Daryl's videos, especially if you like turning, but also reach out to him and tell him to make some more videos.
He posted an Instagram in June, so hopefully he's all right.
Yeah. Cool. But anyway, he solved that problem for me, which has been a big pain. And it took like 20 minutes. I got this big box of these 98 dowels, plopped them down, had the table saw all set up, and I just grab a dowel, roll it over the blade, set it aside. And it took like 15 or 20 minutes to get them all done. And if I had just searched for the right thing early on, he would have saved me a lot of time. Anyway, thanks, Daryl.
Yep, yep.
You guys got anything else?
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear that joke in the after show. I wrote it down. I want to hear the joke.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember the context why I thought of that joke. I'm going to have to listen back.
Well, we're not doing that. You're just going to have to tell the joke. Cool. Thanks for listening,
thank you,
everybody.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you next time.
We'll see some of you next week.
Yeah.
Yep.